Talks.
This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. For years, those involved with education have been working to bring technology to the classroom, but that isn't the only place it's needed. There is a technology gap among students around the country in their own homes. Locally, about 20,000 families with students in Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools are on the wrong side of the digital divide. They don't have access to a computer or the internet at home, and that puts them at a tremendous educational disadvantage. Several years ago, a then 12-year-old girl observed that students in her school lacked basic tools like computers at home. She mentioned that to her father, and the result is E2D. Her father founded a nonprofit to eliminate the digital divide, E2D. They worked first in Cornelius or Davidson, but have now expanded into schools across CMS. Pat Mellon is the founder and president of E2D and joins us for the hour. Welcome.
Good morning.
Morning. Also with us in our Spirit Square studios, Valerie Truesdale, the Chief of Technology, Personalization, and Engagement at CMS. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Mike.
And Kelly Gwaltney is the principal at Garinger High School, one of the schools working with E2D. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And joining us by phone is Deb Associa, the Executive Director of Next Century Cities, a national nonprofit that supports cities that have or are seeking fast, affordable, reliable broadband. I've been searching for that all my life, Deb. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Let's start with you, Pat. It was your daughter. Your daughter, I think, Franny, is that right?
Yes.
Who asked a very simple question to you, but your answer turned out to be pretty complex. You founded this nonprofit called E2D. Tell us the story. How did it start?
Well, my daughter came home one day. She was in the seventh grade at the time. And she just, her observation was pretty simple. She said, it seems like every assignment we have in school presumes that you have a computer at home. And I know for a fact that I've got classmates that don't have that at home. And that just doesn't seem very fair to me. Mm-hmm. But the real question was, she said, what are we going to do about it?
So that was in Davidson or Cornelius?
That was in Davidson. She was a student at Bailey Middle School at the time.
Why were teachers assigning homework that required a computer and internet access if not all the students had a computer or internet access at home?
You know, I think more and more often you're seeing the sorts of resources that are online, and that level of teaching has to occur at an online level. So it's less about lamenting the fact that there aren't students that can immediately access that at home, because there are other ways that they can do it. They can go to the library, they can stay after school. But the truth of the matter is, students that don't have access at home have 7 hours fewer a day to do that work and to be curious and to look into things. And so rather than lament the fact that they don't have it at home, the solution was, let's get them computers at home.
How big a problem is that at CMS? In amongst the students who do not have computers or internet access or both, are they being assigned homework that requires that? And are there any considerations given to those students by the teachers who assign that homework?
Absolutely, Mike. It's logical that if we're preparing our students for the world of work and college in a 21st century environment, that we provide a 21st century learning environment. And it's absolutely logical that teachers would want our students to access whatever the resources are available anywhere in the world. With 145,000 plus children in CMS, more than half of which qualify for free or reduced lunch, we can extrapolate about 70,000 of those children don't have access at home. If we assume that two or three kids might be in one family, that's 20 to 25,000 families at least in the Charlotte area who probably don't have access to a computer at home to extend their child's learning beyond the school day.
I'm actually surprised the number isn't higher than that with 145,000 children. So I'm surprised it's only half of that that don't have computers, because computers aren't cheap, and the internet access is even more of a burden, it seems to me, because it's an ongoing monthly fee. There are 20,000 families, I said at the beginning, in CMS who have no computer and no access. You're saying it's 70.
So that's the number of families versus students. So what we are assuming is that each family would have two or three students. Wow. We don't actually have a very accurate number, because many families have a cell phone. Is that the same thing as a student mm-hmm. learning station after school work?
Mm-hmm. What kind of a disadvantage does a lack of computer or a lack of internet access or both put these students at, Kelly?
I think the word is access. I mean, that's the lack of advantage. Being able to be curious, like Pat was talking about, being able to look things up for themselves and to be able to create for themselves. A lack of access means that you have to do that during school hours, or you have to be creative in finding a way to be able to just get your questions answered.
How many students at Garinger fell into that category before E2D came into the situation?
Right. So we don't have a number at Garinger of the number of families that don't have access to devices. We serve about 1,937 students at Garinger. 86% of our students are directly served and qualify for free and reduced lunch through direct services. And so our assumption is the number is pretty high. E2D came in to work with Garinger as a pilot program that they did with several schools, and they gave computers to 20 of our students.
Prior to E2D coming onto the picture in CMS, what did you do for these kids?
Right. Well, so what we do at Garinger and what we've done at other schools is we buy as many devices as we can. Different schools handle them different ways. So at Garinger, we have purchased a lot of technology with Title I funds, and we give carts to teachers. And so in a teacher's classroom, part of the procedure is you come in the door, you sign out your computer, you make sure your computer's working, you log in. At the end of the class period, you plug it back in, you return it, and you go to your next class. So providing a device in hand in the classroom is the way that we're working towards the solution at Garinger.
Deb Socha, you work with schools all over the country and people all over the country with regard at least to Internet access. We've been calling this the technology gap. Whose responsibility should this be to solve this digital divide?
Sure. And I should tell you also, I was a teacher and a principal, and ran one of the first one-to-one laptop schools in the country in Boston. And then I ran a digital inclusion project. So I have a deep understanding of this. In my opinion, the problem, we all own this problem. So whether you are an elected leader, whether you work in a school, a nonprofit, a private company, within a community, this is a pretty difficult problem to solve. And we need all hands on deck if we're going to do it well.
Put this into a perspective that a non-digital person can understand. There are a lot of older people who may be listening and thinking, you know, I went to school in the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, even the 90s. We didn't have computers. We didn't have the Internet. So why is this important? Would you compare not having a computer and not having digital access, Internet access, to not having textbooks? To not having composition books, not having pens and paper?
Absolutely.
Yeah, my son last night at 10 o'clock bellowed from upstairs and said, "Dad, I need to use your computer. I'm having a hard time being able to access my AP Spanish homework from my computer. Can I use yours?" That's a scenario where not only do some people have access to computers, they have access to multiple computers.
Sure.
If that same child also was a senior in high school and taking AP Spanish and didn't have access to a computer at 10 o'clock on a Sunday night at his or her home, that kid is not just going to go to the teacher and say, "Wow, I couldn't do the homework because I couldn't access it." They're just not going to do it.
Mm. Let me turn it around. When I was a kid, everybody had to have a set of encyclopedias.
Right.
Well, you know, back in those days, the encyclopedia salesman would come around literally door to door, and you would buy the encyclopedia on the installment plan. You might get the A through B section 1 month and the B through C section the next month. Eventually, you'd get the entire alphabet in about 2 years, it seems to me. But we had to buy it. And we didn't buy the World Book or the Encyclopedia Britannica because that was too expensive. We bought, I think, Funkin' Wagnalls. So what's the difference? Schools didn't buy encyclopedias for kids. Why should they buy computers for kids?
So I'd love to answer that. So part of the thing is schools did buy textbooks for kids, right? And so the information is changing so quickly now that we can't keep up with it in printed material. And also, that's not how we realistically access information. Even when you prepared for this show, I'm certain you didn't turn to a book or printed copy to be able to find information, right?
Yeah, no, you're wrong.
Well, you did. Somebody might have printed it for
exactly
you.
Exactly right.
Okay, there we go. But the whole point of it is how do we access information now and how do we get real-time information? And quite frankly, textbook funding has changed in our state. And so we are not providing print copies the way we used to.
I've been doing this a long time, and I did talk shows back in the 80s before the internet, and the computer in the office was a mainframe. So when you typed a sentence, it went to the mainframe, and everybody else was on it, and that sentence might appear on your screen, I don't know, 30 seconds later. So you kind of typed in the blind and hoped that you didn't misspell anything. But we had a researcher who went to the library every day and got information and Xeroxed stuff and tabbed it and brought it back and highlighted it and gave it to us for our preparation and research. It can be done, but it seems to be doing it that way while everybody has instant access puts you at a severe disadvantage, even if you have the gumption to go out and find the information on your own.
Well, absolutely. I mean, just think about calculators. So I'm a math major. Back in the 80s, we interpolated to find the sine and cosine of an angle. We had to pencil and paper, use a table, and interpolate. Now, and even in the 80s, now you push a button, you get the answer. So what I'm expected to do with that information is at a much higher level now,
right,
because I'm no longer having to do the arithmetic behind the function. That really wasn't what was important. What's important is what do you do with it? And so this access to information, if a student can't access information quickly, then they are disadvantaged because they can't go higher.
Initially, Pat, as I understand this, you gave 100% of the families in need at Davidson computers. How much did that cost? Who helped you pay for it all? Where did the money come from? How did you raise the money, etc.?
I'm really glad you asked that. The model for E2D is a little bit like the Habitat for Humanity model, in as much as the families have skin in the game. We have received donated laptops from corporations. Our most notable corporate benefactor is Lowe's, which is headquartered up in Mooresville.
And they don't even sell computers.
No, but what they do is they use them and then they repurpose them for this. We also help them source the internet, and we also do digital literacy training. Those are the real three important things. If you don't do all three of those, mm-hmm. you're not really accomplishing solving the digital divide. So if you get them a computer and you help them get online, but you don't teach them how to use the device, it's a little bit like handing a kid a violin and saying, play this thing.
Right.
You have to teach them how to use the computer.
Well, you mentioned, I think it was you, Kelly, maybe it was you, Val, I'm not sure, that there are computers in the classroom that you give to kids. So how big is their need for training if they're using them already? And they may not have one at home, but they're using them in the classroom. How big is their need for training?
I would say it's pretty significant.
Why?
I was in a classroom the other day helping some students get online and being able to access through the different passwords and all the different keystrokes it takes to get to the right piece of software and get logged in and to the right module in their online learning. So, I mean, there is a skill set that it takes to be able to navigate that over time you get really, you get more proficient at it. But at first you absolutely need training.
Would seem to be easier. Yes, go ahead, Deb.
Add to that. I would say that it goes beyond the training of the student themselves to helping the parents understand the technology and what it can and can't do. And it's been my experience that parents often react one of two ways when they are uninformed. They either overly limit the child's access or they let the child do whatever they choose on the technology. And neither of those is a good option, right? We need to have parents engaged and involved. And I think when we're working with families with significantly low incomes, the existence of technology in the home can actually impact the quality of life of everyone in the home.
And we'll talk about that because parents are a part of this equation with E2D and bringing these computers home. And we'll do that when we come back for the break. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Honda of Concord, committed to customer service, satisfaction, and bringing excellence to the car buying experience. Offering a selection of over 700 new and pre-owned vehicles, details at hondaofconcord.com. Well, in previous centuries, people took apprenticeships to learn a trade, and today, apprenticeships are returning as a way to prepare the next generation of workers. There are about 375,000 apprentices working throughout the country, and the president wants to double that number over the next 5 years. Here, 10 community colleges are banding together to be a part of this, and we'll find out what they've accomplished and what remains to be done on this program tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm show, President Obama says a bomb might have caused a Russian plane crash over Egypt last weekend. The latest on the investigation, possible ISIS involvement, and what the incident means for air travel and security.
Join the Diane Rehm show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about computers in the schools and how CMS is partnering with an organization called E2D, which started a few years ago up in Davidson and now is spreading its tentacles out. Pat Millen is the founder and president of this nonprofit that brings computers into the homes of students who do not have them, and also helps them gain internet access. Valerie Truesdale is also with us, the Chief of Technology, Personalization, and Engagement at CMS. Kelly Gwaltney is the principal at Geringer High School, one of the schools benefiting from this program. And Deb Socha joins us by phone, where she is the Executive Director of Next Century Cities, an organization that supports cities that have or are seeking fast, affordable, reliable broadband. You wanted to point out, Pat, that this is not a handout, that the families who get these computers and these and this internet access have skin in the game. How so?
Well, up in Davidson and Cornelius, those two towns own a municipal broadband provider, My Connection. And so what we've been able to do in those communities is the families pay $40 up front, and then they pay $10 a month for the rest of the year.
That's a lot of money. To
so $120. But what they get for $120 is they get a new computer with new software, Microsoft Office. They get the internet for an entire year, is included in that price. And then it's not a price, it's to participate in the program. And then they get lots and lots of training.
What if they can't afford the $40 and the $10 a month? What if they can't afford that?
We always try to err to the side of what's good for the children. So in a case like...
Do they have to jump through hoops to prove their financial...
No, they don't. We actually initially had them jump through hoops, and then we're going, why are we making these guys jump through hoops? We need to make this as easy as possible to get these computers to these students.
Now, that's up in Davidson, because, mm-hmm. and as you say, the city kind of owns the system. Here, it's controlled by Time Warner and by AT&T and maybe one or two other smaller outlets that provide internet access. What do you do here?
Well, there are a lot of good things happening right now. I think with gigabit speed coming to Charlotte, most notably, people talk about Google Fiber, but AT&T as well. Mm-hmm. What's happening is these businesses want to get the high end users, but at the same token, they know they need to do something for the lowest quintile within Charlotte.
Why? Why do they know that?
Well, for one thing, they're obliged to do it through their own partially owning the spectrum from the FCC.
Okay.
The thing is that there's great downward pricing pressure right now for those families, and everybody that we're talking to right now seems to be coming very close to what will ultimately be about a $10 a month product for families to be able to access.
The computers themselves, he mentioned that he was giving out brand new computers. Is that the case throughout the system?
They're actually used computers.
Okay. Yeah. But they're new to the student. Mm-hmm. So used computers are coming from corporations like Lowe's, and you say you're talking to another major company right now who are talking to their lawyers about how to do this. These computers have been used for probably 2 or 3 or 4 years. They're scrubbed, they're refurbished, but everybody knows that an old computer is an old computer. Can you be successful with an old computer, with an old chip and limited disk storage and all the things that come with being not the latest, greatest?
Students can. They can access information. It might not be as fast as they would hope with a brand new computer fresh out of the box, but it does get the job done, and that they're able to be curious and they're able to search, and it may take a little longer, but they are provided with power of learning.
And at least as it relates to the Lowe's lot that we get, they give us 500 laptops a year. These computers are fabulous. They are not.
Well, they're only a year old, yeah.
Yeah, they're very good computers.
E2D, on November the 5th, and that's 4 days ago, got this national award from the National League of Cities Conference, the first Digital Inclusion Leadership Award. And at the time that you received this award, you said, our application is good because we were able to say we had a digital divide and now we don't. In Davidson, you have completely eliminated that divide?
Yeah, so let me tell you how that works. So Davidson was also honored by Next Century Cities, the National League of Cities. We did and have and continue to eliminate the digital divide entirely for Davidson. So what happens is the second that you have it taken care of at the elementary school, the middle school, and the high school that Davidson feeds into, you need to take a picture of it that second. Because 2 weeks later, there will be people moving into the community. And just as an example of that, 2 days ago on Saturday, we distributed another 22 laptops to families at Davidson Elementary School, which was our first school, to fill in the gap. So we are constantly...
This is never ending, is what you're saying.
Well, yeah, for now it's not. But the other thing that's critically important is we have to continue to support all of these families in terms of trying to help them when their technology goes wonky. Mm-hmm. And we also have to continue to teach them how to use these computers effectively. Not just the students, but the parents themselves, for job seeking, for information about health, for information about benefits, for how to do online banking, how to buy, how to use Skype to call back to your family wherever they may be, as opposed to buying the credit cards down the corner that cost so much. There's so much relevancy for these families. We and our workforce in terms of volunteers, so much of that is Davidson College students, actually. They've probably provided over 100 volunteers over the last couple of years that actually go into these schools and work with these students. A lot of the tutors are also CMS students as well.
I want to come back to that because that you're talking specifically about Davidson and it's now spreading into CMS. Before we do that, this national award came from the National League of Cities, Google Fiber, and Deb, your organization, Next Century Cities. From your point of view, Deb, what is E2D doing that other organizations around the country are not?
You know, having worked in digital inclusion space for many, many years, I was very excited by this application. I love the way they got students participating, the lemonade stand process to squeeze the divide, and how that brought about amazing community support. I think the other piece is the number of partnerships E2D very quickly created with folks like Lowe's, with the college. The elected officials in Davidson are right on board, walking hand in hand, trying to make this work. It felt like a huge community effort that was coordinated by E2D that got everybody focused on this issue and everybody interested in solving the problem. That, to me, made it incredibly innovative. And, in fact, what they got, the award they got, was for being so innovative. Mm.
What is the lemonade process that she refers to?
So the first year that we, before we even distributed our first computer, we had a fundraiser in May where we got the elementary school kids to set up lemonade stands. Seems easy enough. We thought, what a great way to make the students in the school part of the solution, let them understand issues of social justice and of how they can make a difference in creating solutions. So we said, yeah, set up lemonade stands and we'll collect the money. And so after 3 hours on this particular Saturday with powder and water and cups, we were amazed to see that there was $3,200 on the other side of that. The last 2 years we've done it. Last year we raised almost $6,000 in 3 hours. And our goal this year, we maybe have a potential sponsor that's going to help us go to all 90 elementary schools in CMS.
What do you do with the money, given the fact that the computers are being donated and you're asking the participants to put forth the $10 a month for the internet access? What do you do with the cash?
Well, we do have an organization in terms of we have an employee that has to, you know, provide all of the access with the families. Her name is Vivian Nieve. She's unbelievable. But it also allows us to spread the love a little bit further in terms of the computers. So, for instance, the computers that we provided to Kelly and the other four principals at West Mac, West Charlotte, Harding, and Vance, those computers were subsidized entirely, and they were given to these kids because these were the top 20 kids educationally at the school. As you said earlier on, some of these families $80, maybe more than they could possibly spend at this point. We need to be in a position that we can get as computers as far as possible and that we can do digital literacy training in those schools.
The computer is one thing. Obviously, you can't access the internet very well without some sort of device. But with the device being disconnected from the internet, the value of that device is limited. Deb, we haven't talked a lot about access to the internet. We've mentioned it a couple of times. But I think if I understood what I read about you yesterday, you're saying that making sure high-speed access is available in all areas of a city is the first step toward digital literacy or closing this divide. Is that accurate?
Right. It's really why I moved into this organization. It is still about equity, right? That there are parts of some of our urban areas that do not have access to broadband. And there are parts, of course, in our rural communities that do not have access.
And when we say broadband, we're talking about high-speed internet access as opposed to dial-up.
Right. 2 million Americans have dial-up right now, and that's a scary number.
Yeah.
We really ought not to be in that position. But I think I tend to go by the FCC's definition, which is 25 megabits down, and I believe it's 4 up load speed. So in contrast, when a city has a gig, it means they have 1,000 megabits down and 1,000 megabits up. So there's a really wide range of what that might look like.
Are there places in Charlotte where even if you have the money, you can't get internet access at that level? Do we know?
I am not certain of what the levels are that are available. I know that very soon Charlotte will have gigabit access, but I couldn't tell you what all of the options are throughout the city.
Okay. Now, when you have private companies as the gateways to the big pipe, the internet pipe, how do you work with them, Deb, on a national level to get them to understand the scope of the problem for young people who don't have access and get them to provide that access at something that approaches affordable for people at low income levels?
You know, some of the companies have been incredibly responsive to requests for low-income access. Not all of those companies have done so, and honestly, I don't think they own this problem entirely. They are for-profit companies, and so they are looking for ways to make a profit, and they are beholden to their shareholders. I think you're very lucky when you have a city like Davidson, which owns its own, because they are beholden to their citizens, and there's a real difference there. I would add that there are some other low-income options. You know, there's a little bit of instability right now because they're moving from a 4G model to an LTE model.
That's the phone. That's the phones. Those are the digital phones. Okay.
Right, but there is a way to get a hotspot that your computer you can hop on with your computer. It won't be really fast, but it will be sufficient. And those plans from organizations like Mobile Beacon and Mobile Citizen are $10 a month. And I found, quite honestly, that even our lowest income families that I've worked with over the years can find $10 a month for access. As soon as they understand its value in their life and the way it can help them save money, they can find the $10.
You know, we've done several programs on this, and when Google Fiber announced that it was coming here, we did a couple of programs about what that would mean and why they're coming, and the cities where it has already rolled out, like Kansas City. And one of the topics that came up is that when you have a whole group of people who don't have computers and they don't have internet access, they don't see any relevance to computers or internet access to their lives. They have to be taught. And the question that I asked then, I believe, if I recall correctly, was if you don't see any relevance and you don't see a need, then maybe you don't need it. And I'm talking about the parents here, not the kids, because obviously the kids do. What do you do to explain people the relevance of this in their lives?
So, Mike, the key is, as you mentioned, the students. Students need it, and they need it for their learning, and their parents are seeing that from their students. So parents are coming to us to say, we need to be able to, what can I do to become a great supporter of my child? We put together in the city, the county, the library, the school district, the Urban League, and some others, Queens University, a group called, that we call Digital Inclusion Steering Committee. And we're up to now 92 partners to push this conversation because parents are understanding that their children need it. We've got to get the whole community to understand that this is a full community, full court press, and we can all make this happen together.
Because, Pat, you refer to this as a your solution as a four-prong solution to this problem, getting hardware into the hands of those who don't have computers, providing connectivity to the Internet, digital literacy training, which you've mentioned, and relevance. Which is the harder of that, and where do you start? Are those in order?
No, they're all equally critical. Now, when we talk about relevancy, just like Valerie said, computers are relevant to 100% of students. That's not even a question. But as it relates to parents, I'll give you one example. So we work with a lot of Latina mothers who are just getting a computer for the first time. In many cases, are putting their fingers on a keyboard for the first time. They are now having parental engagement with the schools and with the teachers that never existed before. When you can get a Latina mother to bang out an email in Google Translate, press the button, cut and paste it into their new Gmail account, send it to the teacher, and then the teacher responds by reversing that, typing a response, putting in Google Translate, and sending it back in Spanish. That's a modern miracle.
And all of that's free. Google free. Provides that access
totally
for free.
Totally free.
It translates. How accurate is the translation?
it's actually pretty good.
It really is. It's strong enough to communicate.
Deb?
This is Deb. I would say, you know, from the work that I did in Boston as a principal, I went from having maybe 200 parents come to an open house to having over 1,000. And I attribute this to the work I did to get parents engaged in their children's digital lives, and as a result of that, it brought all that access. And I would say Google Translate's not great, but it's way better than the alternative, which is no communication.
At all, yeah. Kelly, I'm not sure, I've forgotten how many different languages are spoken by students within CMS. Does it work for all those languages, Google Translate?
Pretty much, yes. It depends on the language. Now, we have students at Geringer from all over the world. Mm-hmm. And so, but our biggest subgroups are certainly Spanish speaking and then Nepali and then Burmese. And so to be able to communicate, I mean, it's just amazing the difference it makes to be able to just say a simple thing about how your child did at school today.
So that makes the parents no longer deaf and blind to what's going on because they don't understand the language. Right. They can now communicate. What does that do to student performance when the parents are suddenly in the loop, so to speak?
It makes a tremendous difference. We had an evening event a couple of weeks ago, a Hispanic parent night, where we were able to come in and speak to parents in their language and explain to them the differences between the expectations at our school and maybe where their students came from. But to be able to communicate in their language is tremendous. It gives them a comfort and an ease, and it also says that we expected you. And that's what we're trying to do is we're building that connection to the heart because we're caring about their kids.
We asked on social media how important computers and the Internet access are to children's education, and we're getting some responses, which we will share with you when we come back with Pat Millen, Valerie Truesdale, Kelly Gwaltney, and Deb Socha. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Novant Health Cancer Center, providing customized treatment plans and a team of professionals to help give patients the support they need. Information available at novanthealth.org/cancer. And Jazz Arts Initiative, presenting pianist Lavelle Bradford, playing the music of jazz artist Herbie Hancock this Friday, part of the Jazz Room Concert Series at the Blumenthal Stage Door Theater. Tickets available at blumenthalarts.org. President Obama says a bomb might have caused a Russian plane crash over Egypt. So on the Diane Rehm Show in 20 minutes, the latest on the investigation, possible ISIS involvement, and what the incident means for air travel and security. That's coming up at 10 o'clock. If you'd like to join our conversation, now's the time. You can search for us on Facebook or Twitter at WFAE or email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. And we're coming right back.
I'm Robert Siegel. During my years in the news business, I've seen a lot of improvement in cars. Better mileage, fewer emissions, enhanced safety. But here's the greatest advance that I've seen yet. Now, your old car can be turned into more of all things considered. Imagine that. Donate your car to this station and turn it into the programs you love.
Donate your car and get a tax deduction. Call 1-866-789-8627.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking today about an award-winning program called E2D, which started in Davidson and has now moved into Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools. The president and founder of that, Pat Millen, is with us. His daughter asked a very simple question. Why is it that some kids in my classroom who have homework that must be done on computers with access to the Internet don't have access to either? And that was the beginnings of making sure that those children did have those, at least in Davidson. 100% of them do now, and the digital divide has been eliminated there, and we're working on it. They're working on it here with CMS. He's with us in the studio along with Valerie Truesdale, Chief of Technology, Personalization, and Engagement at CMS. Kelly Gwaltney is the principal at Garinger High, one of the schools that will benefit from and is benefiting from this. And Deb Socha joins us by phone, executive of director of Next Century Cities, which provides or works to provide or helps cities provide high-speed Internet access. We asked on social media how important are computers and the Internet to a child's education. Here's what we're getting back from people. Maggie, who is Mayor Pro Tem of Salisbury, Maggie Blackwell, writes, "I'd like to point out Rowan Salisbury schools provide a device for every student, iPads for home and classroom for grades 3 through 8, MacBooks for home and classroom for grades 9 through 12, and iPads for classroom only for K through 2. We deployed full distribution 3 years ago. We have 80 hotspots, many with our fast, vibrant device around town for any kids without Internet in the home." Nick writes, "With so many tools needed for homework, have any CMS classes tried to flip the classroom where you watch recorded lectures at home and do the work during school? Knowing how to use the Internet is just as important as access," he says. Kelly?
Yes, absolutely. And so a lot of our teachers use different pieces of software to do exactly that, to record their lessons. They use Google Classroom frequently so that students can access content at home, whether it be lectures, whether it be Khan Academy, so that they're coming into class ready to do different hands-on work with the teacher support.
Off the air, Pat, you mentioned that if you're in an AP class and you're not using Khan Academy to help you bolster your information, your knowledge, your expertise, you're probably falling behind.
It's absolutely.
That's all computer.
Oh, absolutely. And the truth of the matter is there's only so much work that can be done in the classroom during the day. The classroom period is about an hour and a half. If you really want to be an AP physics student, you've got to do at least another hour and a half to two outside of the class. Khan Academy, great resource.
Remind me not to go back to school. Lisa, Ms. Gwaltney mentioned that students have access to computers at school. I understand that CMS has purchased 70,000 Chromebooks for kids to use in the classroom. Given that there is a real need amongst children for the 20,000 to 25,000 laptops to solve the divide in their homes, wouldn't sending these laptops home with those kids be an easy solution for the hardware part of the equation, particularly if we could find a suitable way for the families to contribute a small amount to serve as an insurance policy against breakage or theft? You're nodding in recognition there.
Thank you, Mike. Many school districts do exactly that. As Rowan Salisbury indicated, it's an all-in approach for their community, and they send the devices home, and they figure out a way with hotspots to provide support for families who don't have that. Ours in CMS is a scale issue. Right now, our students have access at school. We have devices for every child in grades 5 through 9. We're hoping to get grade 10 this year and have those in before Christmas, if at all possible, for grade 10 in the classroom. But until we get a way to solve the digital divide at home, it would exacerbate the digital divide if we sent them home and there's no access.
Remind people how many students are in the system.
145,000 plus.
That's a lot of computers.
Yes, sir.
And a lot of access. How does this work? Lisa brings up an interesting question about insurance and theft and things like that. When you give a child through E2D a computer, and although their parents are paying the $40 up front and the $10 a month for the access, when you give that child the computer, is that computer theirs forever?
Yes, absolutely. When they get the computer, it's theirs to take home with them. And we're very careful to explain to them that this is a fragile product and a valuable product. Take good care of it.
Well, kids make mistakes. That's why they're kids. And things get dropped and things get lost and left behind. What happens if that happens? If they break the thing and it no longer functions, or if they leave it on the bus and it's never seen again?
Again, we are to the side of the children and to the students. And so we hear these cases from time to time, and we try to provide solutions for them. They may not get quite the quality of computer the second go around as they might have gotten the first round, but we have very good computers that we use as replacements.
We recently had a conversation on this program about digital inclusion as a city, and we found out that 18 to 19% of homes here in Charlotte lack internet access. That's higher than the national average, which is about 17%. When you combine that with the fact that upward mobility in Charlotte is known to be among the lowest in the nation, embarrassingly low, below that of Detroit, if I recall correctly. Programs like E2D, does that make this even more important? The fact that if you're born into a low-income household in Charlotte, your chances of moving out of that are very low. Does this help?
Hence the urgency of the whole conversation of making sure that the community buys in and that we all focus on making sure all of our children have access to a better life. And it has to do with access to information and knowledge.
One of you said, and I've forgotten which one, in the break, that Charlotte has to make this a priority.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's no question. So what we've been doing in Davidson, we've actually now distributed 4 times as many computers in other communities than we have in Davidson. We've done it at 18 schools now, and we've got a lot of work still to do. We need to come up with a community-wide solution that tackles the rest of CMS. If we wait until we go school by school by school, it's going to take 5 years for this solution to happen. Every single day that a student doesn't have a computer is a really bad day. And so we have to inform ourselves and make that the mandate, that the priority, that we've got to get these computers. And if Charlotte, North Carolina makes it a priority, if the Opportunity Task Force and the Charlotte Executive Leadership Council says, this is a priority for our city, and if we can get our kids online and get them to graduate from school and be successful, that changes the economic footprint for all of Charlotte.
The way you pull yourself out of a low-income situation is through education and a good job as a result of your education. And one of you, I think it was you, Pat, in the break said that 62% of jobs in the future will require high computer skills.
That's what we've been told by the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve also, though, has statistics that say that every kid that graduates is twice as likely to live in poverty for the rest of his life. Every kid that doesn't graduate is 63 times more likely to be incarcerated at some point than non-dropouts. So if you take the opportunity cost to get these kids the education that they need to not just graduate but to get real jobs, it changes the economics of the way our city will run going forward.
Kelly, these kids get these computers, they get access to the internet, their parents get access to the schools because suddenly there's a computer in the house and they can communicate back and forth with teachers. But all of this requires training, and particularly I would think for the parents, because the kids are pretty savvy. Even they may not have a computer, but they're interested and they watch over the shoulders of those who do. So they're used to that. The parents maybe are not. What kind of training is CMS providing for both the student and the parent?
Right. So for the 20 students at Geringer that got the E2D computers, the volunteers from E2D came out and worked with the parents for a training session. So also my staff member, Amy Baker, who works with the program at Geringer, communicates regularly with the students who receive those computers. And then like what Valerie mentioned earlier, there's been a course developed to teach parents how to use the technology and how to be actively engaged with their kids learning with technology that can go out through, forget the name of it.
It's all right.
Atomic
yeah.
learning.
Yes, that's
Atomic
it.
it's not just the kids doing homework and researching on right. the internet and writing papers that they can then turn in electronically. You don't even need a printer. It's also the fact that the parents can communicate with the teacher and the parents can interface with the CMS website and keep track of grades and things like that. I'm not sure how long this has been in operation at CMS, but where it has been in operation and where parents have had this access, has it changed how students perform? Has it changed how parents watch over the student's shoulder and push them to better performance?
It absolutely does. It builds in a level of accountability for student ownership of their learning, because they not only hear from their teacher they need to do this, they hear from their parents they need to do this, from their, I as a grandparent can log into my child's information and find out how she's doing in her elementary school in Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools on a daily basis. So the accountability is significantly changed.
Hmm. Well, and let's flip that. Last week we sent home report cards. At Garinger, if the majority of my families don't have access to the internet, don't have a computer at home, the first inkling they got of how their student was doing in school was when they received their paper report card Friday afternoon.
Hmm. In Davidson, where this has been going on now for a couple of years, can you effectively measure the result of what you've accomplished here?
Well, we're doing a lot of work right now with CMS. We work with a group at Davidson College called SCNO, which stands for Students Cooperating Nonprofit Organizations, basically. Yeah. And these students are gathering data from CMS. We have about 3 years for our initial class, and they're doing regression analysis to compare the data against the general population, as well as through the Latino community, the African-American community, the white community. And the information that they're providing us right now indicates that families that get a computer for the first time are showing very strong measurable growth above and beyond where they were before. Mm. When we first started it in Davidson, 59% of the families that didn't have computers at home didn't pass their – or only 59% passed their end-of-grade exams, whereas those that had computers – past 95%.
If I understand this, your background professionally is as a sports marketer.
Mm-hmm.
You're really well informed about this. At what point did that happen? Why did you take it upon yourself to become an expert in this? Why did you take it upon yourself to start this? You probably didn't need this extra work in your life. Why do you care so much?
You know, I think our family's always been one that focused on issues of social justice, and this is just one that came to our attention. My daughter's question of what are we going to do about it really stuck with us as a family. Within 2 days of her asking that question, we saw example after example of assignments that our kids were getting, including my second grade son, who, you know, go home with your parents and get on the internet and go check this out. And he's going, I know there are kids in my class that can't do that. That seems unfair to us. And we just decided as a family that this is something that we really want to dedicate ourselves to.
Would you say, as people from CMS, would you say that this is crucial, that this topic is crucial? Or how would you describe it? I don't put words in your mouth. How would you describe this problem?
I describe it as absolutely the most urgent thing facing us in education today.
Then why have we not heard about this, as far as I know, at all in the discussions about what the school board should be doing? We hear about pupil reassignment. We hear about the whether or not we're gonna go outside of the system for a new superintendent. We hear about magnet schools, et cetera. We don't hear a word that I know of about this. Have I missed it?
We have very active conversations within our organization. Goal one of our strategic plan calls upon Team CMS to advance academic achievement in a 21st century learning environment so every student can graduate career and college ready. 21st century learning environment is access to technology.
Doesn't the school board have to get involved in this and talk about this so that the business community gets involved in this so that the parents understand? Because I'm sure there are parents listening right now who would easily part with $50 or $100 to provide this access or whatever for those who can't afford it, but they have to know about it. So why isn't the
coming.
School board talking about this?
It's coming.
Go ahead, Deb.
And this is Deb. If I could say, one of the things that I've noticed in communities that have been really successful in getting full community support about this, there's always been that person like Pat, right? That community activist who says, this is unacceptable, and helps be the connector of all of these different groups that can then, as a group, pursue a vision. There needs to be that cheerleader, that person that does that. And being a person who's worked in schools most of my life, I have great sensitivity to the amount of time that principals and folks at the school level put in to manage such issues. And I think they really, it's hard for them to be that cheerleader. It's really hard for them to be that. It's also sometimes seen as something that goes beyond the scope of their regular work, and so it's often done outside of their school day. But so my suggestion would be to find who is that person in Charlotte? Who is that person that knows a lot of people, that is passionate about this, that can be the convener and bring the elected officials and the private sector and the schools and, you know, the faith-based organizations, bring all those folks together and say, we've got a problem we need to solve.
Pat Millen.
Let me just say that Charlotte, from what I'm learning around the country, Charlotte is actually tackling this behind the scenes in a massive way through the Digital Charlotte effort, through the Knight Foundation grants, through the Digital Fellow program. We have two that are working on this, Bruce Clark, Eric Friedman at Queen's University. There's a lot of work going on, but a lot of what we've been doing thus far has been to get our act together in such a way that we can go now to corporate Charlotte and to individual Charlotte to say, if you declare this a priority, this community has every asset available to solve the digital divide. Everything is here. We just need to put it together.
You mentioned donors and volunteers. Do you need donors? Do you need volunteers?
Yes and yes.
And what kind of training, what kind of a person makes for a good volunteer very quickly?
Somebody that's committed to trying to find a solution.
What do they need to know about computers, I mean?
Almost nothing. I mean, the sort of things that we do all day, every day on computers are the sorts of things that families new to computers need to know.
Now, you've expanded from Davidson to CMS. Any plans to expand beyond that, at least in the region, or are other people copying you around the country because of your award recently?
Davidson to CMS to North Carolina to the USA to the world. Everybody should have access to computers.
Pat Millen, founder and president of Eliminate the Digital Divide, E2D, Valerie Truesdale, chief of technology, personalization, and engagement at CMS, Kelly Gwaltney, principal at Garinger High, and Deb Socha, executive director of Next Century Cities.